Hi. Welcome back, everybody. I'm so sorry that it has been so long. Life has been crazy, being what life is. But we are here to bring you a special episode because today we finally saw a movie that's in theaters at the same time. So we are going to be bringing you an episode on John M. Chu's Wicked.
Isn't it weird? Like, this is like the third film I think we've seen that was in theaters, and then we're like, let's do a little bit of a podcast on it.
Yeah, because I mean, we did Spider-Verse,
we did, right? Barbie. I think that was it,
and I think that's been it. Yeah, it is not. And I know that this is like a highly requested thing from you guys that we do, is like, go see movies in theaters and give you guys a review on them. Unfortunately, like I said, life being what it is, that's not always feasible. I would love to do more of that, so I promise I will try to make that more of a thing. Unfortunately, Cherie's chaos is even more chaosy than mine, so.
It really do be more chaosy.
So, yeah, we'll do what we can, but I do very much want to do that. But we managed to do it this time for Wicked, because I will always make time for Wicked. I want to jump into it. As always, you don't have to have watched the movie in order to listen to the episode, but for this one, I really, really, really recommend it.
To be honest, I think most of our, regulars have seen it, in fact, so they're going to know exactly what we're talking about.
Great, because there are things that I want to say that are definitely about the movie. Like, this is going to be somewhere in between a full movie review and, like, a sneak peek. So there's definitely going to be a couple of spoilers chilling in this episode. But that being said, let's get rolling. I'm your host, Audrey.
And I'm your co-host, Cherie.
So sit back, relax, and please don't silence your phone while we check your cinematic pulse. To sum up what this movie is the quite literally long anticipated film adaptation of the smash hit Broadway musical of the same name. And it is based on a book, technically series, McGuire. What's that guy's name? Hold on.
Jerry.
No.
I hope someone understands
like, Toby, that's
that.
Not it.
Okay, good. So, okay, we made the same joke.
Gregory. Gregory McGuire. There's a book series, very, very different than the musical that the musical was based on. But essentially, it tells the origin story of the character that later becomes who we know as the Wicked Witch of the West, in this movie and book series known as Elphaba. Now, I have not read the book series in a long, long, long time. I tried to read it when I was younger, and found out that it is not appropriate and it is nothing like the musical. So if you want to pick up the book after having seen the musical and now movie, it's temporary. Like, do some Google reviews. This is not the same. The content is not the same.
I remember seeing
this movie is rated PG.
Yeah, I remember seeing the book when I was younger. Well, first of all, it was my first musical ever was Wicked. And I saw it literally half my life ago. Like, I kid you not, I was 16 in Chicago seeing Wicked. Didn't remember anything going into the film. But I remember after seeing the musical, I saw someone with the book reading it in my choir class. And I was just very confused. And they're like, it is not like the musical at all. Mm-mm. And I was like, I don't have any desire to read it in the first place. But I've learned that it is nothing at all. They're not similar.
There are some very, very adult themes. There's a lot of political and social commentary in the books. It is, I think somebody described it as an homage as much as a critique of the original Wizard of Oz. So, Yeah. That being said, if you decide to read the book after seeing the movie, temper your expectations because it's not the same. There, it's very well written. It's incredibly well written. I think when I first tried to read it, I was 10.
Wow.
And that's not old.
That being said, when I was 11 or 12, I read Night for the first time.
Night? What's that? What is that? Why do I know that?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, there's just some very adult themes in this book that, like, start off in, like, the very first chapter, so it's just not appropriate for an elementary school kid. 16 is a much more appropriate age to start, like, thinking about reading a book like that. So, yeah, that being said, I've not read the book in a very long time, so most of our discussion today is going to be focused on the movie itself, with the musical ancillary. So you said the first time you ever saw this musical was when you were 16. You've seen it once?
Yeah, one time before I saw the movie.
So I have actually seen this musical 3 times, I think. I believe I've seen Wicked 3 times.
So let me ask
times.
You this, because I had only seen it once. So seeing it in theaters a few weeks ago, week before last, whatever, everything was pretty fresh to me. I knew some of the songs. I knew the basics of the story of at least part one. I could not tell you at all what's going to happen in part two. Could not tell you. Could not fathom it. Could not fathom it. So for someone who saw it 3 times, because I don't remember the musical on Broadway at all. Are they similar? Did they kind of follow the same-ish story?
So I love that you're asking me this question because I literally have this written down. It was unreservedly, like, let me bias our listeners' opinion, unreservedly amazing. It was like seeing a Broadway production just on stage. That's what it felt like.
It certainly felt that way while watching it because obviously it's a musical. But it felt like it had this, like, it really gave the feel of it, and it kind of, I'm going to get to that later when we talk, continue what you were saying.
I was going to say, I've got notes on set design that, like, I want to talk to you about. There's things that I want to get to, but to answer your initial question, as somebody who has seen it 3 times, they stayed so true to the source material. It felt like you were just going to see another version of the stage production, honestly. Because I took my husband when we went to go see it, and I was so excited for him, and God bless him, he humored me so much, because I looked at him and I was like, so we're gonna go see Wicked. I bought our tickets like weeks in advance. I got great seats. I'm gonna wear pink and you're gonna wear green.
You guys looked super cute.
God bless him, he actually did it. Like, it was like a sage green. He threw a leather jacket over it, made it manly and cute, but he did in fact wear green to the premiere of Wicked, and I saw it opening night. And so taking Wes, somebody who's never seen it, doesn't really have an interest in musicals other than what I force upon him as a musical theater kid, I felt like he got the full effect of he might as well have seen the production on stage.
It was interesting to hear that again from, like, as you said, a musical theater kid. All my friends who are musical theater kids were telling me, oh my God. Like, they were telling me they cried. They told me they cried. And I was like, that's incredible. Like, I'm glad it had that effect on people, because I know Wicked was such a big deal and a big part of a lot of people's lives, especially if you were in like musical theater. I was mostly in choir. Musicals, I love them. It was never part of my agenda in high school to be part of them. I feel certain ways about some musicals. I don't know. They're hit or miss for me. But Wicked was fair. One I really, really enjoyed. And that's, Chicago's my favorite musical. If you know me, you know that's my favorite.
Oh, and I was going to say, like, you, so seeing Wicked in Chicago, like, that is, like, top tier level of production, too. So if you were going to go see
it was incredible.
Like, it was incredible. Saw an incredible performance. I know you did.
It's fascinating and wonderful to hear, like, that's the impression it left on people who it would have mattered to the most. So obviously it sounds like Wicked hit the mark for its audience.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I cried 3 times watching this movie. Like, I distinctly remember when I cried. I cried during the opening number. hearing Ariana Grande sing No One Mourns the Wicked.
That was great. That gave me goosebumps immediately.
I cried during the dancing scene at the Ozdust Ball. Mm-hmm. And I cried at the very end during Defying Gravity. And I'm getting choked up thinking about it. During Defying Gravity was like the, like, close to the hardest I've ever cried in a movie. I only cried harder in a movie in theaters seeing Spider-Man No Way Home. That is the only, I have only ever cried harder at that one movie than I did during Defying Gravity.
That's incredible. Because
there was so much emotional fulfillment mm-hmm. seeing this and knowing how dedicated the actors were to the roles. I mean, like, I'm a pretty big Ariana Grande fan. You know this about me.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you're bringing up the acting because that's, it's phenomenal.
Oh, knowing how badly she wanted to portray Glinda, I mean, she was in, I believe she was in this musical as a kid. On Broadway. Like she was like a munchkin or something. Like she was a side like chorus character. But she has like deep connections to this musical. She's actually really good friends with Kristen Chenoweth. And she's like, Kristen's like a mentor to her. And so like this movie this production holds such a special place in her heart. So I know from like watching her firsthand how devoted she was to getting this role right and doing it justice and staying true to the source material.
And I'll say,
yes,
I think had she not nailed it, people would have villainized her. But she did mm-hmm. so well because it's such a beloved character, both of them. But I feel Glinda mm-hmm. even more so. And honestly, having seen it on Broadway myself, having seen Kristen Chenoweth portray it as well, you know, she nailed it, man. Like, the acting on everyone's part in this film, fantastic. Fantastic.
Yes.
Just everyone really just got into the role, especially seeing how close Cynthia and Ariana were
mm-hmm.
throughout the whole production and even post. Like, you see yes. that. You see that on screen. They did such a good job. It's incredible. One of the best acting performances I've seen from a film in a long, long time.
You felt like their bond was tangible. You know, it was like there were moments that, like, they weren't acting. You know, like, they were just letting their friendship and their relationship bleed through the screen to us. They were so genuine about it. And I feel like, you could feel that. You could feel that as an audience member, that there was a genuine just openness to how they were coming to the character and letting it just take over who they were. You know, because it's one thing to, like, do that in a movie and act, but I think there's a whole other level that you add to it when you have a musical. You know, because music is so emotionally moving.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It is 100%. So stirring. Yeah. And so to have that added layer, there's just this undeniable level of emotion and artistry that gets brought to the movie. And I think anything less than what those two actors gave would have been, it would have read disingenuous.
Personally, you know, if everyone else gave a C minus performance and theirs was still a plus, I'd still be like, this movie was fantastic.
Right. Like, it doesn't even matter. Like, they carried the movie. Like, I didn't even care what you do after that. They were amazing.
Could care less about most of the other characters because I was just like up. In awe of yeah. them.
Yeah. Yes. 100%. Like, everyone else's performance was great, but it was all ancillary next to Cynthia and Ariana. They did absolutely amazing. And actually, and something I was going to say was talking about being so true to the source material, Ariana made herself kind of like the gatekeeper of staying true to the source material. I was watching a video the other day where she was giving an interview and she actually talked about when she was reading through just the screenplay, there's this iconic moment during the song One Short Day. And I can't remember if I sent this video to you or not. I probably did because I've sent you so much Wicked content over the past couple of months.
I know, I've watched them. Me remembering them is completely different. Yes. Unfortunately, everyone sends me stuff over the weekend while I'm working, and then I don't get to it until like Tuesday or Wednesday.
Sure.
And then it's like, boom, I've watched like 30 videos.
That's top tier friendship dedication, though, to go back and watch all the videos that your friends have sent you.
The highlight of my week.
That's true love right there.
Great things. Everyone sends me great things. How am I not going to watch your videos? Please send them to me, guys. I will definitely be watching them. I may not watch them right when you send them, but they will be watched. Unless you're sending me on TikTok directly, and then they're never getting watched.
In which case, they're going to wait for like a month.
No, they'll never be seen. Send them to me directly. Don't send them to me on TikTok. I'll never see them.
I opened TikTok the other day. It was like, you have 16 unread messages from Wesley. And I'm
like 100 or more. And I'm like, it's not going to get seen.
This is complete side note. He hit his message limit on stuff that he had sent me that he hadn't seen yet. So just so you guys know that limit does exist.
The limit does exist. No matter what Mean Girls taught you.
I think he hit like 50 videos that he had sent me that I hadn't watched yet, and it told him, you can't message this person anymore.
I didn't even know that was a thing. How do I have 67?
Oh, but it was just with him specifically. Like, he had sent me 50 unwatched videos.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. That's one way to send a message, I guess.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. So anyway, but I believe, back to, I sent you a video on this, I'm pretty sure, but she was talking about, there's this iconic moment in One Short Day, the song One Short Day, in the Emerald City, and at the very end of it, there's a big pause when the guard reads their invitation and says, the wizard will see you now, and then they finish out the song, right? Mm-hmm. So in the script, John Chu had changed that to say, who rang that bell? And it was just gonna be different. Mm-hmm. And Ariana got to it, and she was, I guess, like angry texting Cynthia, and she was like, Did you see it? Did you see it? And Cynthia's like, hold on, I'm finishing it. And then they read it, and they angry FaceTimed John Chu together and were like, we need to have a discussion. You can't change that line. Because it's not what we're used to hearing, right? Because mm-hmm. that's an iconic part of that song. It's on the soundtrack. So even if you've not seen Wicked in a very long time, you've got the soundtrack available to you. And they keep key points of the dialogue and audio on the soundtrack tracks themselves. So when you're listening to it, you get little bits of audio. They don't cut it out and just give you the music. You have audio and dialogue. And the wizard will see you now bit of dialogue is something that's in the original soundtrack and something that everyone hears every time they're listening to this song. And they were going to change it. And Ariana was like, listen, no, like, I'm going to get this from the word go. Like, we have to stay so true to the source material. This is not like this is my creative version. This is my take on it. Like, right. We're not changing anything.
It goes again with musicals. You have a very dedicated audience coming to see something they grew up with. Again, let's be honest, this film was made for our generation, the nostalgia generation.
True.
You can't just go
the nostalgia generation.
I understand creative expression. I mean, there's so much of it in the film already. There is no need to go and change something iconic. No need whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So you need a fight for the things like that matter, because there are sometimes where a creative choice can just absolutely diminish something where you're like, especially when it's a remake.
Right. You know what? Yes, you're 100% right. Like, you reach a point where you have to make a decision of like, okay, but does my creative interpretation matter more than the collective fan experience that I am trying to give service to?
I mean,
right.
Yes, 100%.
At that point, the answer is no. You know, the answer is no. Your creative expression does not matter more than that.
And I think
you have to make that decision.
You've heard me harp on things too, especially in the Marvel universe, which I still love and adore. But it's like, mm-hmm. I will always hate when a gag has to undermine something serious. Let something be serious.
Mm, I know you don't like the humor undercut.
I don't. Like, I'd rather, like, it's one thing for it to be written really well. Like, I'll say again and again, like, the humor in the first Avengers and the first Guardians are really good because they're very authentic. I think some of the later films lose that authenticity because they start trying to make you laugh, where it's like, no.
You're thinking of the second Guardians of the Galaxy movie, aren't you?
My lips are sealed. It's the worst Marvel film. I'll never get over Guardians 2 because it's like, I didn't get to choose to laugh in that film. You guys were
shove the laughs down
your
throat.
Yeah, you were trying.
Just get you at every chance. It was like a bad SNL sketch, you know?
Yeah, horrible
gags. Every line is an attempted joke. Like, what if we do 10 jokes, at least one of them's got to land.
Right, but then when Avengers 3 Part 1 and 2 came out, I felt like the flow was a lot better. So,
I definitely put a lot into that.
I 100% agree with, like, the creative expression. There's a time and a place, and then there's a time and a place not to as well.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that they cast actors who cared so much enough to say, like, okay, look, I know I'm just playing a part here, but I'm giving a part of my soul into this project, and if I'm doing that, then I'm gonna have input and I'm gonna make sure that it's right. And I'm glad that they had people like that and people like Ariana to make sure that they were staying true to the performance, because like you said, they have such a dedicated fan base for this, right? Like, you have people who
you don't mess with the things theater kids like. You don't do that.
No,
they will annihilate
you. Don't even try to go up against a mega fan base like that. Like, because you got mega nerds. They're just theater nerds, right? They're not like
the strongest
like Marvel nerds or
anime
like video
nerds,
game nerds
and theater kids.
Like, we like cosplay professionally about the things that we care about,
right,
on the regular. Like, that's the fan base you're talking about.
You absolutely cannot mess with those fan bases.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, you have a fan base of people that have actually like performed this musical live. And so now they're going to see, like, their own blood, sweat, and tears that they have poured into a production put on the big screen. Now, I've never gotten to be in Wicked. Unfortunately, my high school was not quite big enough to do Wicked, although it was always a dream of mine. But I was in The Wizard of Oz. My very first theater production was The Wizard of Oz. I played a munchkin. Of course I did. Granted, I was in eighth grade, so, like, it was allowed. Like, we were all short.
But you're fun size for sure still.
I know. I played the barrister, actually. So,
but I agree with that sentiment where it's, you just, I had a point and I lost it. Never mind.
Well, this holds a special place, like, in so many viewers' hearts, right? It holds a special place. This world holds a special place in my heart because I've been a part of it.
I got it. Yeah, no. So, like, because one thing, Wicked is one of the classic musicals. When you think of the most popular musicals, Wicked's on that list. Chicago, Cats.
Mm-hmm. Wicked, Phantom of the Opera.
Yes.
Yes, Chicago. Yeah, you've got Cats. You've got, yes, there is a chunk of, like, when people know what you're talking about when you say the name of this musical.
And even if you haven't seen musicals, you're like, oh, I definitely know some of those, right? Like, I may have not seen them, but I've heard of them.
Right, exactly. You've seen something about it somewhere. It's that permeative into the culture. All that to say, I'm really glad that they took the time to do it right and stay so true to the source material, because you said it, this film is geared towards the nostalgia generation, right? It's geared towards millennials. I mean, Wicked came out in 2005, I think, is when it debuted on Broadway. I believe, don't quote me on that, but it was right? So it has almost been 20 years since this musical debuted that we have been waiting for it to be brought to life on film. It's been something that we've been asking about since it hit Broadway, you know? And so I'm so glad that they had the dedication and had a director like John M. Chu who cared so much about getting it right. That you saw how much he loved it too, because he listened. He listened to the people that he cast and I could find no fault with the casting direction in
this.
So
good.
Right? Which, and as far as casting goes, he made everybody audition. He said there were no outright offers for this movie. Every single person came and auditioned, and they would come back, and they would come back again, and they had rounds of auditioning that people had to get through. It was not just like one super long day where everybody came, and they sang a little bit, and they acted a little bit, and then they made a decision. No, they kept coming back to it over and over and over again. I think Ariana Grande had three times that she had to come back for the audition for Glinda. And they didn't just make her sing Glinda's songs. She sang a whole bunch of them. She sang, I think she sang The Wizard and I. She sang Popular. She sang No One Mourns the Wicked. And they also made her sing Defying Gravity. So somewhere there is an audition tape of Ariana Grande singing Defying Gravity, and I want to see it.
Ooh, but, yes. But surely to God that'll exist somewhere.
Right, I'm like, when it comes out on DVD, I'm sure it's going to be on there, and I'm so going to buy that. But, all that to say, they did not do the casting halfway. Like, their dedication bled into every aspect of this production. And one of the aspects that I wanted to ask you about, actually, was I wanted to know what you thought about the set design.
Love it. But...
Wait, okay, hold on.
Because I had to think about this because there are things I love and don't love. Not necessarily about
the... Please edit in crickets. So, okay, so before you answer then, because I want to tell you what I noticed.
Okay.
And I want to get your opinions on that.
I will say...
And I want you to definitely tell me where you didn't like things.
It had nothing to do with the sets themselves. It was how the sets affected sound.
Oh, we'll get to that too because I have thoughts on that. So, okay, so sets just by themselves. Me looking at it, it looked
like... They were impressive.
It looked like a theater production on steroids, right?
For real.
You had just wraparound sets of where everything took place on. It was a giant soundstage, right? Like a la the Great Hall and like Gringotts Bank and things like that. You had just massive sound stages where they built a whole set and then essentially just like green screened in like the sky and things like that. But everything that they were, all of the locations they were acting on were real, including the 9,000 live tulips in Munchkinland.
Huh.
Yes. So,
what a feat.
I know. So me as, again, a theater kid, I'm looking and they even constructed some of these sets like you would construct a stage set for a musical theater production. Like an example would be Munchkinland. There was one set where you had, it was like a big O-shaped opening and it was like on a second story and you had two Munchkins who were in there singing. And they just had a couple of little lines and then the camera panned away from them. But the construction of that, how it was like off the ground, a second story, but there was like a cutout where those characters were just to deliver their couple of singing lines. That's something that you see in stage production.
Honestly, my right? Like favorite you have one. To
build that.
My favorite built. Oh man, I can't decide. It was either the library or. The very first
with the rotating
one.
Ladders and everything.
It was so great. Okay. Let me calm down. I think it was the library. I think that was my favorite set. But I also, as you were saying, it kind of gives homage to, you know, actual built sets on a stage. When Glinda, or at the, I guess at that point, Galinda, comes down into her bubble.
Yes.
She comes down in her bubble. And she lands at the top of that, like, I don't even know what it was, but, like, it's built up. It's built up like a stage would be built up for platforms. And I don't know why,
yes,
but that was the first thing that I...
your character to come down.
Yeah, that was the first thing I thought. I was like, man, this feels like a musical. It's built to look like a musical. It's giving homage to musicals.
Right, like that, her little bubble chair was not, in fact, like, CGI, right? Like, sure, the bubble was, but, like, the chair itself and her landing on like the raised dais thing. Not like none of that was CGI. It was all a real physical sound set. And so I loved that because again, it felt like you were seeing just a grand scale theater production.
It's incredible.
Right? Just from like a production perspective, that's insane. You do not see that kind of dedication to creating a set because it's not easy. And when you have a film budget or like if you're working on a timetable, you don't always have the luxury to build enormous sets like that.
I mean, look at Marvel, which is all green screen all the time.
It's all green screen. You just have like a giant green screen box with uneven terrain that they're supposed to like traverse and just make it look authentic. And you're putting a lot on the actors and then, you know, the graphics team.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like that's a great juxtaposition, honestly. Like if you guys don't know what we're talking about, please just go look up like Marvel behind the scenes filming or like Marvel green screen.
I'm trying to remember whatever. Which actor said he didn't enjoy doing Marvel films because it was green screen. I think it was, oh man, who's the guy who played Batman in the Dark Knight trilogy?
You said the Batman name. Trilogy?
Yeah, I'm blanking on his name. Hold on. Stand by.
Holding.
I can see his face in his mole, but I can't think of his name.
Christian Bale?
Christian Bale, yeah. He said that he didn't really enjoy doing Thor Love and Thunder because it's like you're performing in front of a green screen.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to go off with that. There's no... It doesn't give a feeling at all. It's just you have to... That's where your acting chops really have to come in because it's like you're acting against nothing. Whereas with a, you know, a stage, an actual built stage, you can get familiar with it. You can use it, utilize it. You know, it makes a big difference to be able to work with what's around you.
Yes, 100%. And I think for acting, and especially for these actors, I mean, Cynthia Erivo, she is, you know, primarily... she does theater productions, right? Like she's done movies and stuff too, but her origin and her core is in musical theater. And so especially when you have somebody who's like that, and even like thinking Ariana Grande's acting background, like thinking about like her days on Victorious, you're working on immersive sets, right? Where like you're filming in what feels like a high school hallway, right? Mm-hmm. So especially for those actors' backgrounds to be able to be so immersed in your set, I feel like adds a whole other layer of realism and genuineness that you feel. You know, like there's always that element of like you can't trick your viewers completely. We always know when something's like a little bit not real mm-hmm. versus when something is. You know, even if it's, you know, bad like animatronics or whatever trying to make something real, like thinking from like old 70s movies, like your eye still perceives it as real, even if it's, you know, special effects,
right?
So seeing and absorbing that full element of realness, fully getting immersed into the world of Oz and into the school of Shiz and things like that is
the names, man. Shiz,
right?
Oh,
yes,
God.
Shiz.
I'm like, this is the name y'all keep, Shiz? Okay.
Yes, Shiz. Shiz University. But you had a point that you wanted to make about set design and sound, and I want you to talk about that.
So it's not necessarily sets themselves. It's because they did their vocals on a soundstage, which I know you and I talked about. And there are things to love about that, and there are things to not love about that, especially if you're going with the real feel of it being like a stage production, recording it live right there is incredible. But when it comes to sound mixing, there were times in the theater and on the soundtrack where I'm just like, that doesn't sound layered correctly. Where to the point that sometimes the vocals, they definitely felt disconnected from the instrumental parts. And I will say at times that took me out of the film where I was thinking too deeply about the sound mixing, because it's me and I'm a nerd and I love sound.
I mean, there's you.
But those were the things about the soundstage where you do, depending on how you feel about it and depending on if you care enough, where I think it got a little lost in the sauce, if you will. That being said, overall, I didn't mind it. I really enjoyed it. I could stay immersed enough to think about it and care about it more later. Now, the sound design in general was fantastic. This is me, and this is my nerd self coming out, and I judge me if you will, but one of the biggest goosebump moments for me in this whole film was the sound of a door closing. Okay?
In Emerald City at the end of One Short Day?
I think so. It sounded so good.
Okay, so it's funny that you say that, because I remember literally watching that point in the movie, because you go from this big, boisterous, beautiful song number that they just did, and then they walk into the actual, like, palace mm-hmm. in the Emerald City itself, and the door closes behind them, and I remember hearing just the heaviness
yes.
and the echo and the finality of that, and I remember thinking, oh, I bet Cherie loved that.
You're so right.
Because I was reminded goosebumps. Of, like, the Harry Potter, and I was reminded of, like, the Harry Potter, like, apparating crack. Oh,
God. Yes. My bread and butter. Good sound design.
It's exactly what I thought of, because I was like, because here's the thing. A sound like that is, like, a character moment in and of itself. Because it's like, great, you had your wonderful fun, you're excited to be in the Emerald City, and then the door closes it's on that part of your experience.
Such a
and
now you have to experience point.
The seriousness of why you are in Oz right now. Like, you came to see the wizard because he needs to evaluate your magical skills.
It's
right.
So, and again, if you watch films the way we do, you're looking for little things like that. What are the small mm-hmm. points? It can be something as simple as, like, a pillar separating two people to show their disconnect or that there's an issue mm-hmm. involved. But, like, the door closing and the fact that you felt it and noticed it too.
I did.
It's on purpose, you know? The yes. sound design of that door, and again, I'm harping on it because it's important, was incredible because it needed to be something you noticed and thought about. Because as you said, the door's closing. Seriousness is about to pick up. All that fun and games we were having, done.
Done.
Done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you get it with the sound of that Oz door is, and the heaviness. Yes. And it's just like, to think about how much time and effort went into making that sound for that purpose. This is what I'm here for, y'all. I'm here to bring out and make you think about the nerdy things, right? Audrey talks yes. about a lot of the fun stuff, and I'm talking about that nerdy stuff, okay?
You're like, give me light, give me sound. This is what I'm talking about.
Let me tell you why they're so important to the story. Yes. Oh my goodness, yes.
Oh, I loved it. Now, question for you. From a sound design perspective, do you think that sound was exclusively edited in, or was that a physical sound that was augmented?
No, I think I'm going to say that had to be created. You know, that was mm-hmm. something where, you know, you're picking out sounds and putting it together to make that sound. You can certainly, mm-hmm. I just don't see how on set, I'd have to be there to see it if it was made to be that way. But I think that's definitely something where
I want to tour these sound stages.
Right. I think that's definitely one of those where maybe they had the sound and maybe cut it out and then added in a better sound.
Ooh, and like layered it mm-hmm. and added things into it.
Yeah, gotcha. Because
so it could be a little bit of both.
And again, I think because of the nature of it in that point in the film, I really do think it was something where they made the sound. Like, they put it on top of it or create it, cut out that old sound, mm-hmm. put in a new sound. Just because of, again, that was the end of the fun and games. Things are about to happen here in Oz, right? So I think, yeah, I think mm-hmm. the noise itself was created.
Okay. So in theme with that, talking about, like, live sounds that were recorded, and you were talking about how that affected the sound layering, mm-hmm. right? One of the things that I want to make sure our listeners know, and I think if you've seen the movie and you care about it, you already know this, but maybe for our lay people who are not as well versed in Wicked, I want to make sure everybody knows the vocals for the movie were done live,
mm-hmm.
which means, like, every time they filmed a scene, they were singing live
mm-hmm.
every time. Regardless of how many takes they did, because you don't know if, like, which one's going to be the final take, if you need to get some B-roll, they are singing their vocals live.
Which is, again, like, where I think kind of the issue comes with the sound of the music with the instrumentals, because obviously they're not having a full orchestra mm-hmm. there every time. There's no way.
Right. So, no. So what they did, how they captured it was very similar to what you would do in a theater production, where you have strategically placed mics.
Microphones. Oh,
so
yes.
So, like, in a in a theater production, you are sometimes mic'd in more than one place. Like, if you see pictures of actors who have portrayed Elphaba on stage, she's got, like, a microphone, like, peeking out of her hat. Mm-hmm. You've got one that comes down, like, the part of your hair down into your forehead. Mm-hmm. Or you'll have one, like, in your dress. You also have stage mics on, like, on the floor itself to pick things
up. Sometimes they're hidden in objects.
Down from the air. Yes, like they're hidden in objects. Exactly. You have multiple strategically placed microphones in a big level production like that. You do. And that's what they used for this, was they had strategically placed microphones to make sure that they were picking up the actors' voices at any one point in a scene. And then because they did that, hold on, I lost my train of thought.
I'll help you. Mixing gets funny a little bit too because of that. Like, you're picking up sound from multiple mics, putting them together. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to explain mixing sounds in any kind of, I'm not.
You're like, I do it every time we do an episode.
Here's the thing. I've done it where I've mixed, like, oh my, I can't even tell you the layers upon layers and layers of sound. And that was for like a scene that's like 3 minutes long, right? A scene that's 3 minutes long and it has like 120 layers to it. 120 different sound layers to it. Right? And then you gotta bust it through. I'm not, again, let me calm it down. You gotta, like, the layering, right? Layering and the mixing and the leveling. And I think that's where, again, it's not terrible, but it's...
No, but you, as a professional, notice it.
The crispness of it is, like, lost a little bit. Especially in some of the sound mixing. I remember listening to, I think it was popular in theaters, but then I was like, I wonder what it sounds like on the soundtrack. I went and listened to it, and I was like, it's a little weird. There's a little weirdness where you can tell there's definitely some correction. And I'm like, Ariana has such a good voice, and she did such a good job of actually changing her voice as well.
So good.
But then there are times where I like being able to still hear my artists and a little bit of them in there, and there are times where I don't hear her at all. And I think, was that intentional? Did she do that, or was that mixing? And not knowing kind of bothers me.
You should ask somebody on Instagram and be like, I have a professional question. Because you were saying, like, there's times when, like, the vocals feel a little bit maybe dissonant from the timing of the music.
They don't sound like they're done at the same time. You know what I mean? One is leveled on top. One is layered on top of the other. And then it feels like they're trying to level them all together and make it sound like they were done at the same time. But right, I don't think I think it's lost a little bit.
Yeah, but so, like, and I 100% understand what you're saying. What I think is it gives you the effect of experiencing those vocals live.
Right. Again, like we said, like a stage. Production. Right. It depends on how much it bothers you.
Right. So it's like, what is your end goal? What are you trying to achieve? Okay, well, can we sacrifice X, Y, Z as long as we're keeping end goal in mind? And I think that that's kind of where we wind up, right? Is in keeping with that live production experience because, so they used in-ears to hear their tracks, right? Because obviously, yeah, you can't be playing things if you're going to be having live vocals because then that's gonna add a whole other mess into capturing their vocals. So they're not playing the live music audibly. They're using in-ears. And then the track just plays for them, right? And then they, as actors, can decide what they want to do in the moment. Like, if they want to delay their, like, coming in a little bit, if they want to, like, delivering a line, if they want to pause a little bit more here, if they want to, like, wait a little bit and come in more at this point, it gives them, like, acting and performance freedom to decide how they're going to do their line delivery, because for them, their lines are musical.
Right.
Right? So even as somebody who's listened to the soundtrack a bazillion times, you had, like, Cynthia Erivo doing tempos much differently than you would hear it, but because she's acting. She's acting as she's giving those deliveries.
Right.
And so, yeah, it does sound a little bit dissonant because, you know, she's live making choices on her delivery. Like, there's a point in Defying Gravity where she's doing the, something has changed within me.
Mm-hmm.
And those lines, and she's doing them so purposefully in her own rhythm, not in the traditional rhythm that we're used to hearing from the soundtrack. Because she's doing emotional delivery at the same time, right? So for me, as, you know, musical theater nerd viewing it, I'm like, I understand the choice behind some of the delay and how it doesn't quite line up with the soundtrack.
I don't care about any of that. But I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
yes.
But it's like acting decisions being made live. So like, yeah, it sounds a little bit off. Like I heard some of it too. And I'm like, this like doesn't quite line up. But like I know from a performance perspective, it's them making live choices with their vocals about like how they're going to deliver these parts of the song.
Yeah. Those things I didn't really care about because I don't remember them from, you know, back in the day.
Oh,
it was just
I had this whole soundtrack
it was
on
just
my phone leading up to the movie. So I listened to it all the time.
I'm not shocked to know that about you.
Really?
But yeah, it was just the mixing of the sound. It wasn't how they delivered or how they sang. It was just how the singing versus the instrumental and then putting them together. That's what sounded odd to me. But again, it didn't bother me enough to be like, well, this is just terrible. I can never watch this again. I'll absolutely watch it again and again and again and again.
Oh, but absolutely. Did I tell you what I booked tickets for?
I think you did. Why don't you tell our audience?
You guys, I booked tickets to go to one of the sing-along showings.
Which, to tell you the truth, I can't believe I haven't heard more of those being done. Because when I saw In Texas with Steph, granted, I'm very proud of the audience not singing the music. But there was a girl sitting next to us who was just being extra. Like, she was trying to sing and not sing at the same time. And I just gave her a dirty look. And I was like, no, stop it. There's a time and a place
and you're not here.
And because
you're not
of that,
ruining my experience.
I'm shocked. Because you're the only person so far where I've seen that. I'm shocked I haven't seen it in more places, especially it being a popular musical that everyone is seeing. It's shocking.
Yeah.
There are more showings like that.
I had to go to, that was something that they, like, publicized upon, like, the release of the movie. So if you were paying attention, it was like, we're asking our viewers, please do not sing in this movie. We know that it's going to be really, really hard. And I mean, like, even I caught myself, like, quietly singing to myself during the movie, but I was only sitting next to my husband. There were like empty chairs next to us, so only he could hear me and only like just a little bit. But like, don't. They asked the viewers, like, please don't do that. Like, there will be a time and place for this. I promise we're going to release a sing-along version. But they didn't announce, it just says like around Christmas. Mm-hmm. But they didn't announce the actual tickets until like last week.
Huh.
Did they actually launch
okay,
the tickets
maybe,
for the sing-along?
Maybe that's what
don't...
it was, and that's why I haven't seen it being announced more. Because
yes.
I was like,
and
how
they...
did you release this film and not make something exclusive for sing-alongs?
Right. Right, yeah. So those showings are starting on Christmas Day. You can see the sing-along version of Wicked. And they're releasing the soundtrack, I believe. I think it was released this week. Or it's releasing on Friday.
The soundtrack?
It's releasing on Friday the 20th. Yes, the sing-along soundtrack.
Oh, I was
going
to say,
Sam's vocals.
Got you.
No, they're going to release a sing-along soundtrack without vocals. So, like, you can actually practice, I guess. I'm going to listen to the original soundtrack because I want to do it in the rhythm of the movie, which has been very difficult for me because for the past 20 years, I have been singing these songs a certain way and with
much.
A certain rhythm.
No kidding.
And... yeah.
It's like,
and
how do
so
I go from Kristen Chenoweth to Ariana Grande's versions? Oh, they're both so fun.
Right. I know. But she did a really good job. She did such a good job of staying really close to it, just making it like ever so slightly different. Mm-hmm. Which, going back to what we were talking about staying true to source material, Stephen Schwartz, who composed the original Broadway production, and they actually brought back to do the movie. Stephen Schwartz, the original composer, composed the movie soundtrack. So all of like the filler that was done for the scenes, extending some of the songs a little bit because we had more break time in them, all of that was done by the original composer.
That's
so
awesome.
It felt so organic.
Love that.
And he wanted to change popular. He wanted to change it up and make it more... like, because it was Ariana Grande playing the part, he wanted to make it more of, like, maybe, like, a hip-hop, like, R&B
no.
kind of song. He wanted to... The original composer wanted to, like, spice it up and change it, and because of who was playing the part, and Ariana said, absolutely not.
Again, to be one of those, like, Glinda. Why would you try and do that? Why?
I know. Like, she's like, I respect, like, you're being creative right now, but she's like, no, I want to be Glinda, not Ariana Grande playing Glinda. Mm-hmm. That's not happening. So, no. Like, respectfully, heck no.
Heck no.
So, yes. So, yeah, it, like, he almost changed that. But instead, she was like, no, we are doing the original version of Popular. Like, I will just make a couple things my own. And I loved it so much. Like, you got key changes in Popular mm-hmm. that we didn't get in the original stage production that she did so beautifully. They really showcased her beautiful soprano vocals. Mm-hmm. I've seen her actually, like, talking a little bit differently recently. Like, her voice literally
was
going to
say that earlier. I was like, all I hear is Glinda now.
Yes. Yes, but because part of that is protecting your vocals, mm-hmm. right? Like, I'm not talking right now in my singing voice, right? Your singing voice is supposed to be positioned in a... This is so very hard to explain without, like, showing you as a visual aid. But your singing voice is in a very different part of your mouth. Right mm-hmm. now, I'm in, like, the back of my throat because I'm in my podcast voice, right? But her, the way she's talking protects those parts of her vocal cords that she uses to play Glinda, and she has been using those parts of her vocal cords for the past 3 years.
Right.
Is like how long they have been filming this movie, right? So that is how long she's been in that different part of her vocal cords, positioning her sound in that part of her mouth, like that brightness right there behind her teeth. And so yeah, it's gonna sound a little bit different because that's now like her new normal. Your vocal cords are like, it's like a muscle, you know? Mm-hmm. With specific condition use, that's what you're gonna get. And she has such a beautiful soprano voice. I mean, we've all heard Ariana Grande sing super awesome high notes. I mean, heck, she can do whistle tone. Like, I'll tell you, and you guys will hear it if you haven't gone to see it yet, Ariana does a beautiful high note in No One Mourns the Wicked that's even higher than the one that Kristen Chenoweth hits in the original Wicked soundtrack. Like, boy, did she show up for this soprano part. Like,
this is her moment.
Like,
she came down in a bubble.
I gotta warm up my soprano. Like, she came down in a bubble, bro. You gonna sit here and tell me that I'm wrong?
I'm so glad she did that with Jimmy Fallon. Just iconic.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. We are hitting close to our hour mark. Where do we want to wrap up for this?
Costuming? I think you said you wanted to talk about
costuming?
That. Costuming.
That's good. Yeah, we haven't really talked about costuming at all. Costuming. Tell me what your thoughts are on it, because I've seen a little bit about costuming, but I think my focus has been a lot elsewhere in the production of this.
Oh my god. Just Ariana, obviously, because of her character being so extra. All of her different little costume changes and like hers having to be a little different from everyone else's. God, loved it. Loved all the different changes. Loved it. Love the micro braids on Cynthia.
Oh, which for her, that was a conscious choice. She gave an interview that said she had a vision of how she knew she wanted Elphaba to look. And because the actress is bald, mm-hmm. right? She keeps her head shaved. But she knew that she wanted Elphaba to have micro braids. And she knew that she wanted her to have a full set of nails. Like, she had a very specific vision in mind for how this character was going to look.
Loved it. And again, I feel like a lot of those changes and choices definitely came from, obviously, you know, lead and costuming. But I love that they give their actors the choice of some of these things. Because it's mm-hmm. important to see, again, it's important for representation. It's important to see these things. Love it. Love I'm trying to think if I've seen anything else this year where I think the costuming could rival Wicked. Because it was so good. Oof. Just really good.
I think it's been nominated for a costuming award.
I wouldn't be shocked. It's very good.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And speaking of bringing the character culture into the current... Well, just culture into the current characters that we're seeing, that was part of what Cynthia Erivo wanted to do with those additions to her character. She's like, I wanted to bring parts of my culture to the character mm-hmm. because like, I want to go back and see this. Cause I was listening to an interview with her where she talks about how Elphaba's nails change throughout the movie. Ooh. As she comes to accept herself and understand her magic and come to terms with it. So, and she was talking about how there was conscious choices that were made surrounding her nails. Because, and like I said, I need to go back and watch this, because what they did was she starts out the movie with her natural nails, with the color of her natural nails being green, like her skin. So it's something that is a part of her. It's not just something that's on top of her. It's something that comes from within her, her greenness, okay? And so you see her natural nails that start out the same shade of green as her skin and then change to another tone, just like our natural nails do, right? So, but then throughout the movie, her nails will become, like, painted a certain color, like they would be painted completely green as she starts to come more to acceptance with herself, and owns that greenness. And then when she goes to the Emerald City, there's actually a scene where she and Glinda get their nails done together. And I believe that, like, the color and the style changes again as she's becoming more confident.
What's in crazy too at that is point and I'm owning so, who she is. I'm so glad you said that, because there's a point in the film where I'm like, they keep showing off her hands, and me being me, you think I would have noticed that. And now that you've said it, I'm like, well, now I gotta, I now I it's been confirmed. I was like, they keep showing her hands.
Yes.
Why are they showing her hands?
Yes.
And now I'm glad to know there they was did. A reason, and I'm more mad I didn't notice it, and I questioned it. I'm mad at myself.
No, no, you were 100% right. Your instinct was there. You just weren't sure what to make of it. That's it. Which, I mean, like, for the Wicked Witch of the West, like, thinking about that character, like, her curved, gnarled witch hands are something. I wish you guys could see me, like, making this face.
How did I picture you? And I'm so glad you said it.
Imagine I was you know exactly what I'm
punching
doing.
Punching your back and then using your hands.
Oh my gosh, that's exactly what I was doing. But the character's hands are, like, such an integral part of that character. You know, when you think of the Wicked Witch of the West, you think of that original 1939 Wicked Witch that does that, that is hunched over with these long, you know, gnarled, curved fingers and her long, witchy nails. And so to make that, to take that and make that something beautiful and expressive and part of this character's existence and how she presents to people who see her, I love that, because it's all about fleshing this character out and showing you who she was originally and how she got from point A to point B, right? So to take that and to make it beautiful just shows how they were so dedicated to looking at every aspect of this character's presentation and turning it on its head, right?
1000%.
I loved it. I loved it so much. It makes me want to go get my nails done, which I just did.
Mine Ooh, are
your
green.
Nails are green right now, too. Yes! We on theme. Okay. Well, I think we have had a wonderful, successful discussion of Wicked. I'm so glad that you got to go see this and we got me to talk too. About it, because this movie has just been playing on repeat. My whole, like, Instagram feed is all just Wicked content.
Yeah, thanks a lot. My Instagram feed is all
I'm
Wicked.
I'm so sorry. I've messed up your algorithm, like, forever now. I'm so sorry.
It's on TikTok, too. I'm like, how?
No, I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's been fun learning about the film.
Ugh, it's so good. I can't wait to see it again. Oh, I'm so excited. I'll let you know how the sing-along goes. I might wind up having an extra ticket, so if somebody wants to go with me, please text me. If you're okay with hearing me belt at the top of my lungs and live my best life for 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Such a long film. My God.
No, it's a lot. Like, I'm so glad. Hold on. Side note. I'm so glad they did this in two parts.
There's no way they could have fit all that in one film.
I know. And they filmed it all at the same time. So, like, they are not going to go back and, like, refilm stuff. It's done. They're going to be putting the final touches on it, re-editing things, putting things back together, and then releasing it. So, I'm so excited. So, anyway, that concludes our wonderful episode on Wicked. Unfortunately, we're not going to be back in your feed for a couple of weeks. We hope you all have, depending on when we release this, either have or have had a Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year, actually, because we are not going to be back until, I believe, the second or third full week of January. But I believe we're finally going to be doing the movie that Sheree originally requested before we got sidetracked by life. And I believe we're going to be talking about Cruella.
Yeah.
If everything goes according to plan.
Another great film with costuming and acting.
Ooh, the costuming. I promise you I'm going to pay special attention to the costuming for Cruella.
I mean, that's the whole basis of the film. It's basically too stylish.
It's fashion and costuming. Yes. So I'm super excited to see what they do with that. Super excited to see what symbolism they use. So come back to us in a few weeks when we have more content for you. Roll credits. Cinematic Pulse is edited and produced by Sheree Jackson. The episodes and theme are written and performed by yours truly. Make sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and you can find Cinematic Pulse on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Thank you so much for listening, because we just checked your Cinematic Pulse.